today with Jerry Hawkins of Penny Arcade, a.k.a. Omen Drawn, CEO of Acquisitions Incorporated.
Indeed.
Thank you very much for meeting with me today, Jerry.
Oh, no, I'm overjoyed to do it.
So, Acquisitions Incorporated is 15 years old this year.
This is what they tell me.
If it's not the oldest actual play outfit on the market, it's very, very close.
I mean, it's primordial, to be sure, either for live play or for podcasts broadly.
So I don't think I need to ask you, like, oh, did you ever expect to get this far? Because there's no way.
You wouldn't have been able to. Like, these things don't make sense in a linear way.
No.
You know what I mean?
But what I do want to ask is, you've been playing Omen Drawn for 15 years.
Yeah.
That's unique, even looking at other big actual plays.
Even in role playing generally,
one plays a character for that long. How has that sort of changed how you've played the character and your relationship with the character over a decade and a half of staying with the same guy?
Well, I mean, 2016, so Omen has actually had a lot of opportunity to be embroidered and receive investment from me at varying levels, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, around 2016, I actually took an opportunity to sort of move him into a heel turn type direction.
Okay.
Right? Where he is engaging in, like, not nominally, like, obviously grotesque evil acts.
Mm-hmm.
And that culminated, of course, you know, over this 5-year play, that culminated at the PAX Unplugged game last year.
Mm-hmm.
With Omen actually, like, foregoing his goddess Timora of love to Asmodeus, and that's a relatively significant that's a relatively significant shift. But part of it is that he thinks he can get one over on the devil, which is a pretty classic.
It's very Omen.
Pretty classic Omen, but it's a pretty classic hubris type thing. Like, everybody thinks they can outsmart Satan, and they can't. But it'll be fun to try.
Of course, of course. So right now, congratulations, by the way, on crossing over.
Oh, thank goodness! The Rubicon,
so that the dark dreams can finally end.
Please.
What I wanted to ask you about that, though, is, so this is the second time you're going to be doing this, where it's presumably pre-recorded, sort of.
Oh, even for the show.
For the show.
Yeah.
How does that sort of change? Because I know that it got started as a podcast where you're on your own in the studio. So
if anything, it's a return.
Right. But, Act Inc. is sort of really coming to its own, sort of really started to make its mark when it started to do the live games at the conventions.
Potentially. I mean, I think that's one interpretation.
Sure.
And certainly it exists, and in terms of live performances, I think it would be difficult to say. In terms of live, like, studio or like live performances in front of an audience, we probably have more than any.
Sure.
Right? But I think that, you know, we wouldn't have been able to do those if the podcasts and the other things hadn't delighted people initially.
It's true. That's a good point. Right. Yeah, you had to have the foundation there.
Yeah.
So what is it like to sort of return to the foundation?
I think it's gonna be really interesting. But part of what I think makes it cool is that obviously, you know, I have a studio at the office. I could sit us down in that studio and we could record another series, but I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It would be much less cost intensive to do that. what I want to do, and this is, I think this has been our success generally, is I want to work with artists to make something unique. And, you know, video, like the production aspects, like, that is an actual art form, and it's one that we don't understand. Like, that's not what we do, right? There's a few art forms I can kind of get my head around, but in terms of how, you know, the video aspect, the editing aspect, the, like, effects, things like this, this is sort of why we brought on Color, which is a local organization that does video editing and video production of various kinds.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can do something that is weird and surprising in that context, like, in that other medium, because that's not our expertise.
Right.
I have every confidence that my friends and I and the artists that we have put together, that we can make a great live play game. But I would like to do something surprising. I would like to invite people whose expertise with video as an expressive medium can maybe do something else, do something that hasn't been seen.
Okay, very cool. It's been D&D all the way down since the beginning. Well, with a couple of exceptions here and there. But
there's two significant exceptions.
Yes.
There is Call of Cthulhu, which is what we do down at... So down in Oz, Acquisitions Incorporated typically takes a different form. It's like Star Wars or Call of Cthulhu. So there's a couple other manifestations of it.
So that's sort of where I want to go with this next question. And a great example was relatively recently in the comic, we saw Omen and Jim's mice.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who was meant to be Mouse Guard or Mouse Ruther. I can't quite remember which one it was supposed to be.
Mouse Guard is more or less what we're talking about, but part of it is because that is one of my, like, that Burning Wheel derived system.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite RPG mechanisms, like, of all time. Like, I'm obsessed with it.
Do you think in the future we'll see Acquisitions Incorporated explore more and more different kind of systems? Do you think we'll see a convention game or a series of Mouse Guard or of something of Burning Wheel nature along those lines?
Listen, all of the above. I think there is an incredible amount of opportunity. I think that there is an Acquisitions Incorporated set during the TNG era.
Mm-hmm.
That is a Star Trek. Because Star Trek actually has a really spooky, especially if you've seen DS9, there is a really grimy underbelly to Star Trek.
Yeah.
And I have like two foremost experts, like true diehard super fans in my office. One of whom is Chris Stroud, who I think could put together the most incredible Star Trek story possible. Right? And so for me, Acquisitions Incorporated is just, it's live play, but it's, I'm not trying to do anything aside from play the game. I'm not trying to get a different job. I'm not trying to, you know what I mean? I'm not trying to build my brand. I really just want to play these games. You know what I mean?
The brand thing happens, right? Yeah.
That happens on its own. That can't be the goal for me. That just doesn't interest me. I'm too old for that type of shit.
So, we've gotten lucky enough that we have an official Acquisitions Incorporated book.
It's very good.
I've read it myself. I quite like it. Very good adventure, I thought.
Yeah.
It was a very interesting deal with the mechanics there.
By pros.
I'm sort of curious, this might be a little bit behind the scenes, where I interviewed Keith Baker a couple years ago.
Oh, wow. What a legend.
I know, right? And one of the things that came up was at the time, Eberron as a setting had been put onto the DM's Guilds. And so now Keith could now publish his own books in the setting that had long since been bought off of him.
True.
Would there ever be any interest or any future in, like, the Penny Arcade, yourself making your own book through something like the DM's Guild?
It doesn't necessarily, I mean, the arrangement, like specifically when you're publishing things through DM's Guild,
mm-hmm.
there's a very specific, you know, sort of overall contract that...
Right, it's pretty complicated.
It's quite complex, and you know, I want to make sure that we retain, like, a significant amount. It's very important to me. We made it. I want to retain as much of the control over that as possible.
Right, right.
And so whether or not that would be strategic or would be a great idea, obviously it would be fun and it would be interesting, but the idea of additional books and stuff like that, I think it's a great opportunity to explore, you know, other print venues and specifically, you know, other crunch and mechanical aspects to the system that we can push forward for sure. That's not off the table, but specifically putting things through DM's Guild, I'm not sure that DM's Guild is specifically designed for that.
Right. Yeah. Because of the nature of how it.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not technically the publisher. You're just a creator. And that's, you know,
exactly.
Who owns
exactly.
What and
yeah.
All that sort of thing.
As someone who is creator owned, is very artist driven. Like I have to protect that. to a high degree.
Okay. I know something always ends up on the cutting room floor when you design a book like that.
Yeah.
What
heaps?
What got left behind from the Acquisition Incorporated book?
There is a significant. Well, I mean, there's a significant amount of stuff, and in fact, there's some of this content. You know, our fantasy is that some of that content will materialize as part of our Kickstarter project, mm-hmm. where the main thing that got left on the floor is actually a lot of the class based crunch spells.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. I would say the main thing that got left on the floor was the stuff that might have created problems in other people's campaigns. Because
yes.
D&D's one system.
Right.
Right? And it's one thing for us to, like, emphasize vibes in our own book and for our own table.
Right, yeah.
But some of the... But Acquisitions Incorporated gets up to some pretty wild shit. And, you know, that's not going to be a fit for everybody's campaign. But if you're making an official book, you're part of that ecosystem. And so you have to really safeguard... That's what you're doing when you put that content out. You are affecting other people's campaigns.
Right.
And so we focused on things that we thought would be interesting and fun, like full adventure, a 1-6 that has all these cool references, goes back, talk about Fandelver, and like get back into some classic stuff, sort of give people who have had experience with those, their sort of on-ramps into the game, great opportunities in this case to you know, put some of those touch points back in, right? But so we have something like a class that isn't a class, which are these corporate roles. And so Acquisitions Incorporated, of course, as Faerun's, you know, most lucrative adventuring corporation, has a lot of proprietary technology that it does offer its employees at a price, of course. And because we have that under those auspices, there's 8 corporate roles that have special technology, special equipment, and most of those corporate roles are just designed to smooth things over at the table in the course of a regular role-playing game. So these aren't classes. It's not crunch in the classic sense. They don't have levels, and they aren't necessarily based around XP, but they can progress and give you new advantages, but they're very, very fixed inside the AI.
Context. Right, yeah. If you leave that ecosystem, you're going to lose access.
Exactly
to
right. Things. Exactly right. So we're not busting anybody's
campaign. So if your CEO
starts
making deals with the devil instead of you might want to be seeking your exit back.
Consider it.
Just something you might want to look at. So back to the show. What can we expect from the show that we haven't seen before?
Which one? The Kickstarter.
Yes, the one that's going to be Kickstarter. Yes.
Oh.
What are we going to get that you might, you know? What's the new hot thing coming out of Back Inc.?
Well, I mean, the main thing, and I think that the thing that makes it kind of a necessity is, you know, just as I said before, so that was quite a big game, that finale at Unplugged. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously it involved a deity switch. That's a pretty significant angle. In addition to the deity switch, it should also be established that my daughter, Certainty Drawn, played by that bronze girl, Jasmine Bular. We were able to win. We were able to extract victory, but at the cost of destroying the entire company and the corporate headquarters, right? And as a result, she had secured from the Feywild, in long in the past, essentially something like a wish, like a wish spell. And so she wished to go back so that she could fix some of this stuff. And then the role that she threw into the tray just happened to be the duration of Acquisitions Incorporated as a entity. So we have rolled it back to the beginning. And as a result, it's like, obviously we have our live games. That's always going to be a part of Acquisitions Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
We treasure that. We think it's a really, really fun part of the show, right? But there's a whole year. And, you know, we have 3 games out there. Happy to do it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But let's think about those more as movies. And then let's think about this more as a show.
Okay.
So these individual episodes are an hour long. They're professionally filmed and executed visually.
Mm-hmm.
they have a different kind of pacing and cadence because it's not a live show. There aren't 3,000 people watching in the theater and then, you know, additional people watching online. Mm-hmm. What we can do with that is tell a different, more structured, tighter story. And we can also use that to fill in big parts of the rest of the year with really cool content that you can look forward to.
Do you think there'll be a series 3 if this works out?
I hope so. I mean, if people do end up enjoying it and they have an opportunity to really appreciate it, then I can't see any reason why it's something we wouldn't mess around with again. It's been a treat.
Cool. Very cool. So, obviously, you have a lot going on. You have all these conventions. You have the comic to run.
Sure.
Corporation, both in reality and in another realm of existence.
Yes, IRL.
Do you still find time for a home game, and how does that, you know, how does that get affected? Like, what do you bring from these sort of games into your home game?
At home,
or is this the workaround where you manage to get a home game?
Well, no, Mike and I consider Acquisitions Incorporated our home game, mm-hmm. and we consider, you know, Jeremy Crawford and Chris Perkins our dungeon masters. Mm-hmm. We don't know anything that they're doing; it's not planned. Like, they are our real dungeon masters. We don't know what the story is about. We don't know where it's going to go, right? At home, I do run games, but I run them for my daughters. Mm-hmm. So a project that I have had an opportunity to explore at home with them, which has just been a treat, is actually Tales from the Loot.
Oh, very good.
And so one of the wild things is, like, you know, so these... The players in this game, obviously, the characters themselves are like 13 to 15 or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. The players, the actual players, are 13 to like 22. It's all the girls from my neighborhood.
Ah, okay.
And so some of them are in college, right? I mean, some of them is like all of our neighborhood kids that we have treasured as they grew up. I mean, I saw them when they were knee high, right?
Right, yeah.
They invited us into their neighborhood. They've been friends with my daughters forever. And so the situation, you know, is that, you know, we're playing, like, games on Zoom. So when they're in town, we'll play together, but they're playing games on Zoom. And, you know, cause some of them are at college in St. Louis. Some of them are, you know, they're in their apartment over in Capitol Hill. One of them is, about 20, 30 minutes north, but she can't always make it to the house. And so we're doing this, like, on fucking FaceTime. You know what I mean?
FaceTime, and, Zoom, Discord, exactly. et cetera.
But for them... Tales from the Loop for us is like cool and nostalgic. For them, it's retro. It's not nostalgic because they didn't live it.
Right, they were around back then.
But the vibe of it, they love. They think it's really, really neat. And so I love running that game for them. It's really, really, it's a blast. It's one of the best parts of my week.
So I'm gonna hop on that a little bit because plenty of our readers ended up having to play online and whatnot.
Oh, very much so.
We're sort of coming out of it where in-person gaming is starting to be a thing again. And then, of course, there's always going to be new players.
Mm-hmm.
So how have you found adapting to remote play to be? Like, what sort of challenges do you think it offered you that you don't experience when you're in person? What advantages do you gain, perhaps?
I definitely don't like it when, like, video freezes. And, like, there's a bunch of things about it that are trash.
Yeah.
That said, it's still human beings. And, you know, the truth is, in this case, I think it matters. I think it hurts a lot less, or it hurts the experience less if everybody already knew each other very well before.
Mm-hmm.
So you can slide into that, and then you just connect that weird image, this shimmering image of a person in this mystical pool. You just associate that to your good friend that, you know, you've known for years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, depending on the type of game you run, I mean, the types of games that I run tend to be entirely, like, it's all descriptive.
Theater of the mind.
Except very, very much so. And, right, but there's people, different people have different relationships to games like this. For some people, these games are actually tactical war games.
Mm-hmm. Which is sort of the ancient origination.
Well, no, the chainmail, I mean, that is its actual derivation.
Yeah.
And so, if you're hitting up something like D20, or obviously you were about to see what D&D Beyond is about,
right? Yeah,
that online experience, I suspect, is going to be world class. I think they're going to make a real dent in that for sure. But I'm saying that, like, for those people, because everybody sort of agrees on what to imagine differently, right? Mm-hmm. And those allow them to do that. They allow them to. They have, different people require different types of tools to get involved and invested. And digital tools, I think, are very, very powerful. Some people, but for the type of game that I run, I just don't necessarily need those tools,
right?
Because it's all descriptive anyway.
Right. Yeah. So your preference, of course, you can manage in person, is great, but at the very least, your type of game doesn't grate against
the way that I play the game is a very, very good match for that. So.
Do you think you'll ever play anyone who's not Omen? If Omen comes to a bad end, do you think he'll manage to weasel his way out?
But I play all kinds of games and I have all kinds of characters. We just started messing around with, are you familiar with Battletech?
I am, yes. Yes.
Are you familiar with Alpha Strike?
I am not.
Are you familiar with MechWarrior Destiny?
MechWarrior, yes. That version of it, I don't think so, no.
Yeah, so MechWarrior Destiny is new-ish. And it's basically a newer version, more streamlined version of the role-playing side of Battletech. And Alpha Strike is a streamlined war game based on the bigger, like the big Battletech, the much more technical, much more crunchy. Alpha Strike gets you to a lot of that stuff, but it boils it way, way down. And so we've been messing around on the stream with a hybrid, because the rules actually allow for this. We've been messing around with a MechWarrior Destiny game that uses the war game as the combat resolution.
Ah, yes. Okay.
And the stats all line up. And so in that game, I play Stavern Otho, which is very, very similar to Omen, but Omen will definitely throw his own people under the bus. Stavern Otho will not do that. But in other ways, there's probably some overlaps insofar as he's running a mercenary company, but this mercenary company is the shitter. That's the main difference, is that, you know, Omen has problems, but he also has money.
Right. He says this person doesn't, empire by
this
now.
Person doesn't have any money. But he also has a much better heart than Omen. But no, I played tons and tons of characters in different settings for sure. I've been role playing my whole life, so
I think that's all the specific questions I have for you. So I'll throw out the last one. What would be the advice you give to someone who wants to get into the actual play game themselves, who wants to share their stories with other people, whether it's a podcast or a stream or heck, a live game at a local gaming store or something like that?
Yeah.
What sort of advice would you have for those people?
Gosh, my advice would be not to come to me for advice. I just happen to have the luck. Several times now, I've had the luck to just be a little bit early on something. And that's a good time to start. But as far as the rest of it goes, just in terms of streaming, like that stuff is pretty turnkey in a lot of ways these days. Mm-hmm. A lot of that technology base has been sort of built up. It's not hard to get a lot of that stuff, and a lot of it's free. But the main thing that I would do or emphasize is just... don't over prepare, because that's certainly the DM side. Just prepare enough, but don't overdo it. Right? Think hard about it, but think hard about people's motivations first. Every character, you should know exactly what that character wants, and then as long as you know what they want, you'll be able to figure the rest of it out in real time. Because that's a big part of the challenge, is that you have to simulate these things more or less in real time, but much, much easier if you know these characters well.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much for your time.
Befriend your characters.
Befriend your characters, yes. Either fan.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time.
It's my great pleasure. That was a blast.